This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. Mayor Lightfoot's economic plan, Greg Hines, talks to us about what the mayor's predicting for the next 10 years. Also, Travel Tuesday, why it may be a good idea to treat yourself this holiday season to a nice vacation. Right now, there's an update on the North American Trade Agreement. Are we going to get it done? Plus, a couple of closely watched economic reports are out today. To talk about it, we're joined by Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, a political economist at andrewbush.com. Andy, let's talk trade right at the top. You've been saying for quite a while now that there will be a deal. It was just a matter of time, and it sounds like there will indeed be a deal, like they're going to get it done.
Yeah, the USMCA deal is just about ready to go. There's only one thing holding it up, but I think everybody listening knows what that is, and that's impeachment. And I expect that to be done by the end of the week. So the House will stay in session for some extra time to get this done, the USMCA deal done, and a budget done. So there's some good news here, Cisco, is certainly on this. And the big thing for USMCA, farmers get better access to Canadian dairy market. There's rules of origin for auto parts. They're a little bit more strict. More auto parts have to be produced by workers who make $16 an hour. And most importantly, there's digital trade and intellectual property rules are updated. That gives us a path for the future, certainly with China. And so I know you want to get to China, right?
Well, yeah, but no, it's interesting because you're right. It does create sort of a template of sorts, at least a little bit. But what you're helping us understand is this trade deal here in North America, it has wide-ranging implications. I mean, it's not just, say, about automobiles.
No, definitely not. I mean, the thing that everybody should keep in mind is that this is something that clouds business leaders who are making investments on their decisions. Like, would you get this deal done? Would you not? Now it looks like it's going to move forward. So this is a real big lift for everybody in those three countries who do business with each other. And specifically, you know, there's a lot of agricultural business that gets done. There's a lot of, for instance, I was out in the state of Washington this week giving a speech out there, and the apple growers out there were really keen about whether or not this was going to go through, because a lot of apples go up to Canada and down to Mexico. So this is really good news for so many people in agriculture.
So let's talk about the implications for China trade. If this deal actually gets done, the North American one, does it provide a template? Does it maybe provide some pressure? I mean, what's the impact on getting a China trade deal done?
Yeah, so the way I look at this is I don't think we're going to have those tariffs hit on December 15th. I think they're going to hold off on it, but I also think that there's not going to be a deal. So I want to caution people about getting excited about it. To me, and I put this out to some of the readers and people who follow me on YouTube, but to me, getting the USMCA deal done means it's less likely you're going to get the China trade deal done or a big deal. I expect something to get done, but much smaller than most people are expecting. I would love to see something for U.S. agriculture. I think that's just such a key component to this, especially on soybeans, but we'll have to wait and see. But again, I think because the pressure comes off from the USMCA deal, now there's not as much pressure to get the China deal done, and actually you could get a little bit more acrimonious heading into 2020.
Always good insight. Thank you, Andrew Bush, political economist. You can find him online at andrewbush.com. As the end of the year approaches, you may want to consider an investment portfolio checkup. Let's get some help on that. Ed Jurtzen is joining us, a certified financial planner at Mack Investment Securities here in Chicago. Ed, before you tell us what we should maybe do in considering a portfolio rebalance, why don't you tell us what that is? Some people may not be familiar with that term.
Well, hello, Cisco. Thanks for having me. So hopefully your listeners have had strong gains in their investments this year. And with those gains comes this opportunity to potentially lower risk through rebalancing. So say an average investor has a portfolio that they have 60% to stocks and 40% to bonds, and that number will change given the gains and or losses throughout an investment year.
And so if people are thinking, all right, fine, end of the year is coming, what's the very first thing you would advise them to do as they're thinking about a rebalance?
Well, sort of review your investment plan. Like I'd mentioned, if you're 60% stocks, 40% bonds, towards the end of the year, look to see if those percentages has shifted throughout the year. So, for instance, since 2009, the S&P is up about 370%. So those percentages over time are going to get pretty far out of whack, which means that you're exposing yourself to more risk. And by looking to rebalance or sell off some of those stocks and rebalance those into bonds can potentially, again, reduce that risk going forward.
Now, talk about maybe doing that and then just sort of forgetting about it for a while. Seems like you regularly have to at least be looking at that, because some of that money in bonds, it might do better if you can get it back into the equities market.
Well, that's a great point, because whether the markets are going up or going down, that provides that opportunity. So if you had a very weak year in the stock market, still look to rebalance and move some of those monies out of bonds and in the stocks. But what's really important to think about is if taxable versus tax-deferred accounts. Remember, in taxable accounts, if you rebalance, anything held longer than 1 year can potentially achieve long-term capital gains. So pay particular attention to taxable accounts, and tax-deferred accounts like 401k plans can be rebalanced more frequently.
Yeah, so it's not just a matter of go in and just start playing around. I mean, you really do have to think through this.
Well, absolutely. And so long-term capital gains have a better tax preferential rate than just short-term capital gains, which is treated as ordinary income. So when you're going through this rebalancing, look to see which accounts and or which assets you can potentially get that long-term capital gain tax treatment in, because, again, you're reducing risk and also potentially lowering your tax burden.
So if you are someone who maybe have 20 years and this sort of money is, I don't want to say playing around money, but maybe it's a long-term vacation fund or something like that, does what you plan on using that money for determine how you rebalance?
Well, absolutely. So if your goals are less than 5 years out, you know, having any kind of money at risk in the equity markets is risky in its own right, because you just don't know what the markets are going to do. But even long-term investment plans, let's say you're 70% invested in equities and 30% in bonds, don't forget to check in with that, because, again, over time, that 70% can grow to 75%, 80%, and 85% with stock market gains. And, again, by rebalancing helps reduce that overall portfolio risk.
Okay, so let's talk. You mentioned the difference in an account that's going to mess with taxes and one that isn't, at least right now. In general, should you be thinking about taxes when you make these moves? I'm thinking you don't want to create a huge tax liability this year because of what you happen to sell.
Correct. So what you definitely want to do is not overdo it. If you haven't sold a security in quite some time in a taxable account, be very aware of what that sale can ultimately do to your taxes, not only in the tax rate, but also some of the things that happen within the tax return can force you or make you pay higher premiums in Medicare taxes, which a lot of listeners may not be aware of. So going back to your point about taxes, always check with your tax professional in regards to what those potential implications can mean in terms of taxes, to make sure that you're not inadvertently rebalancing, but also getting stuck with paying higher taxes.
Ed Jurtzen, always good advice. Ed is a certified financial planner at Mac Investment Securities. Up next, Mayor Lightfoot reveals her plan to reboot Chicago's economy. Greg Hines of Crane's Chicago Business will join us.
Buy, sell, listen. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Mayor Lightfoot has released the outline of a 10-year plan for Chicago's economy. Let's break it down with the help of Greg Hines, columnist at Crane's Chicago Business. All right, Greg, if you can, kind of give us the nuts and bolts here of what the mayor is saying.
Well, let me first, I will do that, but what I think is most significant here is that she's got a plan, and it's frankly kind of refreshing. You've been hearing a lot of talk out of City Hall from some of the new socialist aldermen that businesses there to be taxed. They don't pay their fair share. We got to impose a head tax, a South Street tax. We got to ding wealthy people and turn them up and shake until the money comes free. Well, this plan recognizes that in order to have wealth, you have to, in order to tax, you have to have something to tax. There's got to be wealth there. So instead of dividing the pie, she wants to expand the pie. That's frankly kind of refreshing. So that's kind of the backdrop.
Yeah, and she's not just saying it, but she's actually planning it. You know, she's actually working toward it.
Yeah, and I think that's important relative to where we as a city could be. Now, what she's done is she's picked, as Governor Pritzker did in a somewhat similar plan, 7 industries where the city already does well or where the city has the potential to do well in an industry that's growing fast. Some of this is rather obvious, logistics, healthcare, entertainment, tech is on the list, which is a little bit surprising. Chicago has been trying to emerge as a tech center, and there's been more success than a lot of people realize. So the mayor has designated these 7 areas for special feeding and watering in years to come.
She's talking about, I found interesting, a land use policy the city hasn't had for quite a while, maybe using that as a way to develop some of these underdeveloped communities.
Yeah, the trick here is what the mayor is trying to do is bridge the gap between a central business district that's doing fantastically well and has for quite a while and surrounding neighborhoods, particularly on the south and west side, that have lagged and have lost population. So she says, first, we have to rebuild our population. We have to get back to 3 million people. That alone will solve a lot of problems. But then the question is, well, how do we get there? The city says that these 7 sectors are particularly prone to taking a lot of people who maybe don't have college degrees necessarily, but under the right conditions and with the right help can do well for themselves and for their employers if restructured the right way. The trick, obviously, is going to be doing that, and a lot of those details are yet to come, particularly on the financial side. What kind of incentives are we going to offer? Are we going to continue TIFs? Are we going to do something different? But the idea is that the city as a whole isn't going to do very well unless we as all do well. The days when merely taking care of one part of the population in declaring success are inadequate.
Very good insight. Always appreciate you being on the show. Greg Hines, he's a columnist at Crain's Chicago Business.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. For first time in 4 decades, U.S. wage growth has eclipsed the country's mortgage rate. It's Travel Tuesday, tracking down the best deals between the holidays and spring break. The Chicago City Council debates whether to award large sums of money for settlements tied to police wrongdoing. Democrats announced 2 articles of impeachment, charging President Trump with abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 2 points. NASDAQ is up 12, and the S&P is up 1. Oil is up about 0.25%. Beautiful sunshine in Chicagoland throughout your day as we head to a high of just 25 degrees. Right now, 17 O'Hare, 20 Midway, 19 along the lakefront. The wind chill makes it feel like 7 degrees. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are higher at this hour. To tell us what's going on, Tim Grisky, Chief Investment Strategist at Inverness Council in New York. Tim, we say they're higher, but they're really not much above the flat line. What do you see?
Well, that's exactly right, Cisco. It's a flat day in the market. Today's all about, as it has been, trade negotiation headlines. On the one hand, early this morning, there was a rumor probably coming out of China that there could be a delay in the December 15th tariffs. And, of course, that gives hope that, one, we're close to a deal, and, two, that the deal or the negotiation isn't escalating into some issues that aren't going to get easily resolved. So if there is a delay in those tariffs, it's a good thing. Now, National Economic Council Director Kudlow came out, however, and said he could not confirm that the tariffs would be delayed or postponed. And that they were still on the table. So there's a back and forth here about trade as we've seen for months now.
And how much does the possibility of a North American deal actually getting through? Does that impact anything?
Well, it's really good. Yes. House Speaker Pelosi announced that the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement trade deal, had been reached and that it was better than NAFTA, which was its predecessor deal. And it does do a number of things for farmers, in particular for the auto industry, and it tweaks a number of issues that didn't work very well with NAFTA in terms of digital trade and intellectual property rules. So this is a good thing, certainly, but it was well expected, well telegraphed in terms of all the issues. Not a big impact on today's market.
So the trade deals, are those what maybe holding back the market from even further growth? We've had a pretty good year for sure, but lately it seems sort of a mixed bag and no real significant movement.
Yeah, on the positive side, you see the market reacting less to all these trade rumors and headlines that come out. All of these headlines are part of the negotiation process. It's a very public negotiation process, really, on both sides here with Canada. With China and the U.S. And, you know, it's going to take a while to get it worked out, but we think it is going to get worked out, that we're right on the brink of it. That's going to be very positive for the market, but that has been well anticipated by this market. We've had a big run here in the last couple of months, really since some recent lows in early October. So we don't see a big move once a trade deal gets ratified proposed here, but we do think that it's going to be a positive for the market longer term.
So in general, then, with that sort of uncertainty over trade, maybe no significant movement once a deal's done, but with that uncertainty, what is an investor to do?
Well, I think stay the course. We think that a trade deal will get done that'll be positive for the economy. It'll give corporate managements better visibility into the economy, and we think the economy is going to benefit here. So stay with stocks, stay with your portfolio. Certainly some sectors that would benefit are those more leveraged to trade. So Union Pacific, the West Coast, our Western Railroad, is a big mover of goods coming to and from the Far East. That's going to be a big beneficiary of the trade deal.
Okay, and let's talk about some of the folks who have been more defensive as the year has gone along. What do you think of that strategy? Time to, especially at the end of the year, maybe pull a little money out and set it aside? What do you think?
Well, I think certainly at the end of the year, probably early next year, what we'll see is some profit taking, some reallocation of some of the big gains in certain securities. I'd say certainly tech might see a bit of pressure here given the gains we've seen in technology stocks. But I think it's simply going to be at the margin. I don't think there's going to be a big move there. Value stocks are great, and I was trained as a value manager, but you know, they are not the fast-growing companies. They are companies under a lot of pressure. They're being disrupted by distributors like Amazon and Walmart, and they're going to have a tougher road ahead, we think. Not a lot of growth there, but you're getting them at a cheap price. So great to have a bit of mix between growth and value in every portfolio.
Good insight, Tim Grisky, Chief Investment Strategist at Inverness Council in New York. Thanks for being with us. Up next, it's Travel Tuesday, finding deals on winter trips. The Noon Business Hour presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday here on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Hamilton County Tourism. The period between the holidays and spring break could yield some excellent deals. Let's get some suggestions from Ann McDermott, editor at faircompare.com, based in Los Angeles. Ann, before we get into some of the deals that may be there, tell us why. Why this time of year is particularly good if you want a deal?
Because nobody wants to fly. Demand is low and airlines still have to fill their planes. And there's one surefire way to do that. It's lowering your prices.
So what kind of places are we talking about here? Places that people actually want to go, or sort of those, you know, middle of nowhere places?
Yes, indeed. It's all the places. It's just about any place. Okay, I looked up Chicago deals out of Chicago just about an hour ago. Denver, $55. That's round trip. Okay, Fort Lauderdale, $97 round trip. St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands, $270. Not bad for a lot of sunshine. London, and this, all these deals we're saying that I've just mentioned are in January and February. Now, here's London. This one is April to May, very late April, is 375. That's really hard to beat. Paris in February, 356. Now, there's a couple of ways you can make these deals even better. For example, like in Denver, flying the cheaper days is key. And the $55 round-trip flight, that's for flying on a Tuesday and Saturday. Those are cheap days. If you fly Friday to Sunday, you pay about three times the price, $159. So, you know, these little tricks, if you're a little flexible, you can save big.
Yeah, and that really comes down to if you're just going away for a getaway, then you can do that. If it's a business trip or you have some sort of a wedding or something like that, it's just a little more complicated.
Well, yeah. And of course, if it's a business trip, you don't have to worry about forking over any money. The boss is going to pay. But for a wedding, yeah. But even
the boss may worry about that, Ann. The boss may be concerned about that money. My boss wants me to fly at 2 in the morning.
Of course they do. But, you know, and yeah, help them save. You know, tell them fly cheaper days. Fly adding a stop to a route. Can really bring the price down. For example, that Paris flight is, I said it was $356. That's nonstop, but there is a stop in one leg of the trip. Now, if you get nonstop on both legs of the trip, the price goes up to $572. So just adding that one single stop on one leg of your trip saves you $120. So always consider adding what I call a little inconvenience to your flight.
So when we say spring break, you know, between, say, Christmas, New Year, and spring break, are we talking early March, late February, later March? Well, give us kind of a window.
The standard spring break, it depends on when the schools are off in where you live. And that kind of varies across the country. If you're curious and, you want to see where spring break is at various places, just do spring break Connecticut or spring break Illinois, and you know, all this information will pop up for you. Now, spring break itself, that suddenly the prices will zoom up. But if you're just talking about, taking your own kind of spring break and the cheaper times to fly, particularly January and February, those tend to be very cheap times to fly. But keep on the lookout for when schools have spring break, because the prices zoom.
Thanks.
And you
so
can thank all your college, your son and daughter's colleges for that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, everyone all packed together and traveling, usually to the warm places, but I guess not always. Thank you, Ann McDermott, editor at FairCompare.com, joining us on Travel Tuesday. The average mortgage rate in October, 3.7%. Wage growth came in a little higher, 3.8%. That's the first time that's happened since 1972. Let's update the mortgage market. Brian Wickert, president and owner of Acunet Mortgage, a proud sponsor of the Noon Business Hour, based in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Brian, always good to have you on the show here. Just talk with us about the significance here of wage growth and the mortgage rate. Just something we haven't seen in a long, long time.
Well, we shouldn't really be surprised, because with the unemployment rate at 3.5%, there's just not a lot of workers available. And the good old king of economic laws, the law of supply and demand, would predict wages have got to go up. So that's thing number one. Let's break it down now in terms of somebody looking to buy a home in the Chicago metro area. The latest median income for the Chicago metro area is $68,400. So if somebody makes 3.8% more this year than last, that's $2,600 before taxes. But remember, I just said before taxes. After taxes, which is the money you get to spend, they made $2,000 more. $167 more spendable income a month. That's pretty good, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And is that then creating an opportunity for first-time home buyers who maybe otherwise wouldn't have had the money? I mean, obviously, it's a nice difference. Is that the difference, though, in being a homeowner or not?
You know, it's on the margin, right? So the median home price in Chicago happens to be up $10,000 from $230,000 last October to $240,000 this October. So let's say you delayed buying a home. Hey, you now have to come up with an extra $1,000 if you're putting 10% down, and you're borrowing $9,000 more. But here's the silver lining. As everybody knows, interest rates are lower by a full percent than they were last year. So right now we're getting a double win. The monthly payment for somebody buying a $240,000 home today with 10% down is $121 less than it was a year ago. Add to that the $167 in spendable take-home pay, and you're up $288. That's a lot of money to most people in our monthly budget. So I say, you know, definitely this is good for home buying, except there is a cloud.
Well, talk about that.
All right. Well, the cloud is that inflation. Remember, inflation is the enemy of interest rates. So if all of a sudden overall price inflation in America jumped up to 4%, we would not have 3.75 mortgage rates anymore, because you want to get a real rate of return on your interest-bearing investment, a mortgage or a government treasury bond. So that would push mortgage rates up. That's the cloud in this report, is that labor is an input into every good and service that we buy. Higher prices, higher inflation would be bad for mortgage rates.
All right, Brian, always good information. Brian Wickert, president and owner of Acunet Mortgage, based in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Past programs later today, a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.